Well, this morning, we are, I got to say this, we're in Daniel. I know that's not a surprise to anybody. We're almost done with this. I don't know if you knew that. After today, we really only have one more week, and then we will have walked through the entire book of Daniel. And I know that it's been, I hope that it's been a good thing for you. And I hope that you've learned a few things along the way. I certainly have. I know each week there's like this time change, and I talk about it. You know, I'll get up here and I'll tell you, well, so X amount of years have passed since last week, or, since the previous week, now we've gone back in time, that kind of thing. This is the first time in this entire series that I can say, since the last chapter that we were walking through, only moments have gone by. It might seem like 2 weeks, but only moments have gone by in the scripture, right? Usually I'm jumping forward 20-some years and jumping back 15 years, or there's been a couple years since the previous chapter. But we started last time in chapter 10. And in chapter 10, it was the introduction of this final vision that happens in the book of Daniel. Today, there's not any separation in time. Last week was just introducing the setting in which Daniel was receiving the vision. If you recall, he was standing by the Tigris River, right? And all of a sudden, he had this encounter with this angelic being. And the angelic being, he fell out, passed out. The angelic being had to touch him and raise him back to his feet. And he shared with him multiple times. And I told you a couple weeks ago, he said this powerful thing to Daniel that we need to be reminded of. And he said to Daniel, he said, "You are precious to God." And I said, that's something we need to remind ourselves of. That we are precious to God. So anyway, after all of that, then the angelic being is going to share the content of this final vision. And that's what chapter 11 is, and that's where we're at today. Now, for those of you who have been kind of following with this, and you've been with us in this journey through Daniel, I want to point out a couple things. Daniel interpreted two dreams, right, earlier at the beginning of this book. He interpreted two dreams for two different kings, right? Well, actually, two dreams for the same king, and then he interpreted the writing on the wall for a second king, okay? But here's the thing. The visions that Daniel received, not interpreting other people's stuff, but the visions that Daniel received over the course of his lifetime, there are multiple visions that we talked about that Daniel received, and then the angel Gabriel was sent to interpret, explain to him what those things meant. Interestingly enough, Daniel received visions multiple times, but he only received one vision his entire lifetime. And what I mean by that is every single vision in Daniel is the exact same vision. It's just now being presented in a different way, and he's being given more detail. But the same vision that he was given back chapters ago is the exact same vision as the end. There is multiple visions in Daniel. There is only one vision in Daniel given multiple times. And just given in-depth detail as he progressed. So think about that. Here's this man of God, Daniel. He's in his mid-80s now, right? Mid to late 80s. And he's received all this stuff. God has used him to interpret writing on the wall for a king. He's used him to interpret dreams for a king, right? He's spoken to him when he's prayed. This is a man of God. He spared him when he was in the lion's den, make sure he didn't get killed. And yet this prophet of God only received one vision in the course of his lifetime. And sometimes we get rattled because we want God to speak to us. And we want multiple visions. And the truth be told, I wonder how many of us that God just gives us one vision through our life, but he just reveals it in greater depth as we mature and can handle it. Or as we're obedient to what he's already shown us. See, some of us want God to show us more, but we haven't done anything about what he already showed us. And usually he pauses right there and he waits on you. Right? Just little things to think about. Here's the other thing I find it's incredible about this, and I hope you could see this. In Daniel chapter 11, we're only going to talk about a few different verses today, but in verses 1 through 35, in the 35 verses, first 35 verses of Daniel chapter 11, there are over 130 prophecies that have all been fulfilled and verified by history. Not verified by the Bible, verified by history. They are factual. They're not supposed. They're not possibly. Absolutely all 130 prophecies contained in the chapter 11 of Daniel have already been verified in history. Done deal, factual, period. Now, I don't know what that says to you, but that speaks pretty strong to me. That God doesn't get it wrong. And what he says is going to happen. And it's going to happen the way he said it's going to happen. If you guys would, you could literally take Daniel chapter 11. You could step away from the Bible. You can open up history text. You could probably open up your high school history text or, you know, the college history text. And they would verify all of the information that you see written out in chapter 11. It's an amazing thing. We need to be reminded of that. So throughout this series, I've stated the overall theme and again in the book of Daniel. You've heard me say this phrase before. I'm going to say it again because this is the overall theme of the book of Daniel, is that in spite of present appearances, God is in control. God is in control. That's what the theme of Daniel is, right? It's about God's sovereignty. And if you notice, if you looked at the front of your programs, I had a little thing put on there, because this is what we kind of wrestle with sometimes, right? Maybe you would consider this a paradox. I don't know. Although we struggle with the harmony between divine sovereignty and human responsibility, see, because most of us like it one way or the other, right? I either want God to be absolutely sovereign, and then it takes me off the hot seat, and then, you know, it's all good. I'm not really responsible for anything. Right, we like that one. Or there's those that just want to, we really can't deal with the God sovereignty thing. We like the human response. I like to be the master of my own fate, my own future, right? Captain of my own ship, right? We have a tendency to roll that way too. But here's the problem. Both of those are true. God is absolutely sovereign and humans are responsible. And the Bible clearly teaches it. And in fact, those two truths become very evident in this chapter and in the following chapter, the final chapter of Daniel. And so I wanted to mention that because we need to think about that. We need to wrestle with that a little bit. So when I say that phrase, in spite of present appearances, God is in control. Here's my question. How does that make us feel? And why? We may not all have the same answer. We may not all feel the same way when I say that. I don't know where you walked from this morning or walked through this morning or what you're walking in this morning when you arrived here. But in your present circumstances, the present appearances of your life, when I tell you that God is in control, how does that make us feel? And why? So let's take a look at the text. Daniel chapter 2. We're going to look at chapter 2, or Daniel chapter 11, verses 2 through 5. And it says then, so again, setting Tigris River, visions happening, angelic beings standing there. Daniel's already fallen out. Then he's been picked back up. Now he's getting ready to have this, the content of this vision delivered to him. And it says this, now then, I will reveal the truth to you. This is the being speaking to Daniel. He says, three more Persian kings will reign, to be succeeded by a fourth, far richer than the others. He will use his wealth to stir up everyone to fight against the kingdom of Greece. Now, this has all been said before. From the very first dream, in fact, Nebuchadnezzar's dream, if you remember, he talked about this giant statue he saw. All it was the different kingdoms. Right, and if you remember later, Daniel talked about a goat and a ram and all that, and it was the different kingdoms. Right? This is the same stuff going on over and over again. Same vision. Here's the thing. This rich king that will use his wealth to stir up the fight against the kingdom of Greece is a guy named Xerxes. This is all historical. Guy named Xerxes. You can even think there's another biblical book where Xerxes shows up. I mentioned this before. You've heard of the book of Esther, right? The king that's in the book of Esther, that's Xerxes. That's who he's talking about. Xerxes will become a very wealthy king, but he will stir up and go against Greece, and it won't be good. It won't turn out well. Because then, in verse 3, a mighty king will rise to power who will rule with great authority and accomplish everything he sets out to do. That's a pretty good statement, right? To accomplish everything you set out to do. I got to tell you, I don't experience that very often. I don't know about you, but most of the time I don't accomplish everything I set out to do, or what I hope would get accomplished doesn't always get accomplished. You experience that? Yeah. Well, this guy didn't, right? Mighty king will rise to power who will rule with great authority and accomplish everything he sets out to do. But at the height of his power, his kingdom will be broken apart and divided into four parts. It will not be ruled by the king's descendants, nor will the kingdom hold the authority it once had, for his empire will be uprooted and given to others. You know who this is talking about, right? Alexander the Great. This is who he's talking about. Alexander the Great will be the mighty king who accomplishes everything he set out to do. But at the height of his victory, at the climax of all of it, at the age 33, he will die of illness in the palace of Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon, ironically. And then it will be given, his kingdom will be distributed to four generals. And those four generals are going to wrestle, and it's not going to end up to his, well, he had a son, they killed him, right? So that no heir would get the kingdom. But out of those four, only two would really rise to power. So verse 5 says this, the king of the south will increase in power, but one of his own officials will become more powerful than he and will rule his kingdom with great strength. The king of the south, and so what's going to happen as you read through chapter 11, if we were to go through and I was to read verse by verse by verse, you would hear me referring to the king of the south, and I would talk about the king of the north, and then the king of the south did this, and then the king of the north attempted this, and you would just kind of get bored and lost with the king of the south and the king of the north. But it's talking about two kingdom powers that are going to come out of the backside of Alexander the Great's kingdom being split up. And the king of the south is going to represent the power of Egypt, right? The Ptolemies. If you ever remember hearing that, the Ptolemies, you hear that in history. And then there's going to be a king of the north, and the king of the north is going to represent Syria. Now, you and I think about Syria now and all the stuff that's been going on there and the genocide and the atrocities that have been going over there for the last few years. But Syria was actually much larger than just the country we consider it now, right? The Syrian kingdom was much broader than that. But these are the two kingdoms that are at war, right? And guess where Israel is? Right in the middle of them, right? So even if you're not at war, if your neighbor to your south and your neighbor to your north are, guess what? You're caught in it. You're caught up in it. And so these two powers waged war back and forth. And that's what chapter 11 is talking about, all kinds of different intrigue and different plots and changing of power. It might have been a different king, right? And one king might have left it to his son and then the next one. But the powers haven't changed. It's still the southern kingdom, Egypt, and the northern kingdom, Syria, that are at war with each other. And the battleground ends up being Israel. In the course of the events described in chapter 11, hundreds of years through history, Israel will exchange hands five different times, right? The south will be controlling them, and then they finally get freed from the south, and the north is controlling them. Then they finally get free from the north, now the south's controlling them again. You know, this is what they experienced. That's what went on throughout history, back and forth. There's so many different stories that are pocketed in chapter 11. I only wanted to bring out a couple of verses because sometimes we're familiar with some names, right? I could list all kinds of names of the historical figures that this is referring to, and most of us would just glaze over. right? I mean, I say Seleucid or I say Ptolemies, you kind of, most of you are just like, right? There might be a couple of history fans who are like, yeah, I think I heard of that, right? But, so I say Egypt and Syria. I mean, we're a little more familiar with that. But I wanted to bring out verse 16 and 17 because you might be familiar with some of the cast of characters here. Chapter 11, verse 16 and 17. The king of the north, right? So now that's the Seleucids. That's up in Syria. The king of the north will march onward unopposed. None will be able to stop him. He will pause in the glorious land of Israel, intent on destroying it. Right? They just got, like, hammered from both directions. He will make plans to come with the might of his entire kingdom, and he will form an alliance. Now, all of a sudden, he's going to form an alliance with the king of the south. Now, they've been warring at each other. But he's going to try to form an alliance. You know how he's going to do that? He will give him a daughter in marriage in order to overthrow the kingdom from within. Wasn't really an alliance, folks. You know what I mean? He wasn't really trying to be the guy's friend. The king from the north was sending his daughter, and his daughter, the hope was that his daughter would infiltrate the palace. And as she would infiltrate the palace, she would be his number one spy. And then she would turn on her husband, you know, loyal to her dad, and then he could take the kingdom. But guess what happened? It didn't happen. She was loyal to her husband and left her dad high and dry. You might be familiar with this lady. Her name's Cleopatra. What? It's real history. You thought it was a Bible story. Folks, this is all real documented history, I told you. Right? This isn't just stuff that's made up. We need to somehow get that burned into our brain that this is real. This is reality. This is validated history outside of the biblical text. I hope that should boost your confidence. We sang about it. That should boost your confidence in the Word of God. Yeah, so it didn't turn out too well. She stayed loyal to her dad. I mean, to her husband, I'm sorry. Verse 11, verse 31. Now it's going to talk about somebody else that we've mentioned before. Verse 31, his army will take over the temple fortress. Now, this is a northern king, right? Still the king of the north, still the Syrian influence, right? The Syrian Greek influence, okay? It says his army will take over the temple fortress. Now, this has been mentioned before, so pay attention to this. Pollute the sanctuary, put a stop to the daily sacrifices, and set up the sacrilegious object that causes desecration. Now, it's been used other words. There's the abomination that causes desolation, and there's, you know, all kinds of different things that you may have heard these phrases. But again, we're talking about the same thing that's been talked about before, because there's only one vision in Daniel. It's just repeated and given more detail. Stop the daily sacrifices and set up the sacrilegious object that causes desecration. Do we know who we're talking about here? Very unpopular gentleman in some circles. His name was Antiochus Epiphanes. Remember the story we talked about a couple weeks ago? Right? Where he went in and desecrated the temple and tore it all down. And then there were some people that rose up against him. They were known as the Maccabees. And they went and they rose up against Antiochus and they rededicated the temple. They cleansed the temple. And from that, we have this dedication feast known as Hanukkah. It's all right here, folks. It's all right here. He will flatter and win over those who violated the covenant, talking about Jews that were not living according to the covenant that God had given to them. Right? They were violating God's covenant. So he was able to flatter them and kind of get them to sway on his side. But the people who know their God will be strong and will resist him. Well, the resistance is the Maccabees. Wise leaders will give instruction to many, but these teachers will die by fire and sword, or they will be jailed and robbed. During these persecutions, little help will arrive, and many who join them will not be sincere. And some of the wise will fall victim to persecution. In this way, they will be refined and cleansed and made pure until the time of the end. Now, here's a really important thing. If you were going to look at any phrase that's on this paper in front of you or on the screen, it's that last one. Until the time of the end. For the appointed time is still to come. So, in 35 verses, 130 prophecies are fulfilled. They've all been fulfilled, verified by history. And yet, as we get to the end of this chapter, there's still an appointed time to come. There's still some things that haven't happened yet. Now, I stopped at 35 because it's not the end of the chapter. Actually, there's 45 verses in this chapter. But something I want you to think about. All of a sudden, we stopped at 35 because we're talking about Antiochus Epiphanes and the guy when the whole thing with the Maccabees and Hanukkah, and he's the one that went in and, like I said, stopped the daily sacrifices, slaughtered the Jews, and then he actually took, he set up a idol, a statue of Zeus, or some people even think it was a meteorite, but something that represented Zeus, and he put it in the Holy of Holies, desecrating the temple. And then he got real bold and he sacrificed pigs in the temple, desecrating it, right? But verse 36, once you hit verse 36 in chapter 11, it gets kind of weird. It does. It gets weird. Because all of a sudden there's a shift. The first 35 verses, it's no question. It's talking about all of this history, and it's talking about Antiochus Epiphanes. But when it gets to verse 36, things begin to shift, and some of the things that are being said or spoken or prophesied don't line up, don't work with the history. And by the time we reach verses 40 through 45, don't work at all. In fact, it's impossible for verses 40 through 45 to be talking about Antioch Epiphanes. It's talking about somebody else that's in the appointed time to come. Talking about a guy, maybe you've heard of him, they call him the Antichrist. Right? We've mentioned him before. Right? We'll be talking about him again in the next time we get together with Daniel. But that's who it's referring to. All of a sudden there's this shift. So, just to kind of make this maybe help make this more visual, I want to get some volunteers. So, looking around. Luke Daniels, would you come up here? I need Luke. Harry. Come on up. I'm going to create a visual number line. You know how people got their charts? I'm just going to make one real quick. I'm going to make a chart. We're going to have a human chart. So, Luke, I need you to stand right over here, right up here. Harry's going to be over here with you. Harry's going to be over here with you. Let's see. I need somebody 47. Who's 47? We got anybody 47 years old? Bill, come on up. It's got to be guys. Sorry, it's all guys. It's a guy chart. Sorry. Not against the women. It just would mess the story up because you would be weirded out by some of the characters. But anyway. Okay, so Bill, I need you to stand right here. You're in the center, kind of in the center right here. All right. Now, who's the magic age of 33? Actually, you know what, Bill? Move right. 33. We got anybody here 33? All right, I'm willing to go 32 and a half, 33 and a half. 32, 34. All right, we'll roll with 35. I need another one, though. I got to have two. 35. All right. All right, sometimes timelines can be a little off, so it's okay, right? All right, so I need Phil to stand right here in the middle. Dave, I'm going to have you stand over on that end. Okay, so just to kind of help you out. So, Mr. Daniels, this is actually appropriate. So Daniel was in his mid-80s, right?
How'd you know?
So Mr. Daniels, that's his last name, is how old are you, Luke?
85.
Okay. So this is Daniel. Mr. Daniels, you can call him, but this is Daniel today. And Daniel is, so if you could just kind of like look this way, you're looking this way because you're looking forward in time. This is our history line, our chart, right? Timeline. So we're looking toward the future. This is the future, right? And of course, as Daniel is getting this vision, this man in his mid-80s is getting his vision, there's an angelic being. There's only a couple people that could fit that in, you know, I knew it had to be Harry, right? Do you agree? Do you agree? Okay. If I had a gold belt, I would put it on him, but I didn't have one with me. But this is our angelic being giving the vision to Daniel, right? So you're speaking to Daniel, and as you're speaking to Daniel, but Daniel, you're looking down the timeline of future, right? And in the future, as he's telling you this stuff, there's this man right here about this time in history. This is the king that accomplished all that he intended. Right? Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. Wait a minute. Nope, we got to switch you. Switch you. Wait a minute. 47, 33. Come here. You're going to like this. This actually works out better for you. Sorry, Bill. This is the king at 33. This is the king that accomplishes all he set out to do. Unfortunately, dies of illness in the palace. Alexander the Great. Okay? So as you're looking down the line, Daniel, you're seeing Alexander the Great. Now, about center of the way in this historical line, there's a guy that's 47 years old. And at 47 years of age, he's not really popular. This is Antiochus Epiphanius.
This I go from a high to a low.
You went from a high? I know.
So,
this is the guy who desecrated the temple, right? I know, it was kind of messed up. I felt bad after it happened, but so you need to understand, as we think about this from the timeline, from right here to right here, it's 400 years. 400 years. This is basically, think about it, it's from the time of the, in our history, this would be from the time of the Declaration of Independence, post-Civil War, the opening of Ellis Island. To the immigrants coming in on Ellis Island. You know what I'm talking about? New York City, right? That's the amount of time. 400 years. This being was giving Daniel a prophecy, letting him see historical detail 400 years in the future. We don't even have 400 years of history in our country. Do you know that? As far as our nation, since it was in 1776, I don't know, you do the math, right? There's not even 400. So this is what he's seeing, is he's looking down through history. Right? And all of this is pointing forward. But then if you remember something, he's caused the desolation in the temple. This worked out good for you. But there was somebody who came along later, 200 years later. 200 years later. Between Antiochus Epiphanes and what happened in the temple and the Feast of Dedication, Maccabee Revolt, and Hanukkah, 200 years later, a Galilean, guy we call Jesus, you worked out good for you.
I'll take that.
comes on the scene. And as he's speaking and teaching his disciples, right? He says in Matthew 24:15, he looks back, so point back to them. You're looking back, looking at Daniel. And he tells his disciples, when you see what Daniel spoke about, when you see the temple being desecrated, right? The abomination. He says, when you see what Daniel wrote about, you're going to see it again. So then he points to the future as well. You got to point at both at the same time. You're Jesus, right? That's kind of how it went. But I want you to see this. Jesus is pointing back to what Daniel prophesied through the angelic being now almost 700 years before. And he's telling his disciples, look for it because it's going to happen again. That's where we're at in history. So you and I stand on this side of the cross, this side of Jesus' death and resurrection. All of that is historical fact, verified outside the biblical text and couched inside of Daniel chapter 11. And yet Jesus told us it's going to happen again. The appointed time that is to come. Folks, we're living in that time. We don't know when that is. We don't know. Thanks, guys. Give them a hand for... Don't be mean to Bill today. In the previous vision, when Daniel was given this vision of 70 weeks, and we talked about this a couple chapters ago, and we said that 69 of those weeks have already played out. 69 of those weeks have already played out, verified in history. But yet there's one week still to go, the 70th week. That's the appointed time to come. That's what this shift in chapter 11 is when it goes into verse 40 through 45. It's no longer talking about Antiochus. It's talking about the one who is to come that's going to have some of the same characteristics and going to create some of the same havoc, even more so. We're going to talk about more in the coming week. Well, in 2 weeks, we'll close out Daniel. But here's what I want you to think about. Right? This is kind of not a conclusion. We're going to conclude in our next time with Daniel. I just want you to think about something. Again, I want to pose that question to you. In spite of present appearances, God is in control. God is sovereign. How does that make us feel? Because there are feelings that come with that. Right. Some people wrestle with it, and when I tell you that God is in control, that God is sovereign, there are people that go, well, if God is absolutely sovereign, if God is in control, then do any of my decisions or choices even matter? Is it meaningless? Right? There's some that think that. Right? And then you would just plunge right into the book of Ecclesiastes and say, see, it's biblical. That's what the man said. Because you didn't realize that it's a book of bad advice. It's a teacher who is coming to a conclusion on his own. It's the wrong conclusion. Read the final chapter in Ecclesiastes. When somebody corrects him. Ooh. And you got that stuff on your wall, don't you? Tear it down. Right? You got verses up there out of context. You didn't even know. You're like, well, but this is Ecclesiastes. It's all, yeah, right. Ecclesiastes is almost meaningless. Other than it's the Word of God, so I'm not going to say that. But you need to think about it, right? But that's where we go. If God is sovereign, if God is absolutely in control, then are my thoughts, decisions, and all that are meaningless? No, they're not. They're not. Then other people go, well, man, I'm grateful. I'm encouraged. Do you know that the people that were hearing this from Daniel, the people that were living their lives in exile in Babylon, were ecstatic about the concept of the idea that God is sovereign. It gave them hope while they were in exile, that God was working on their behalf and there was hope for a future, that their people would be redeemed. Man, I don't know about you, but sometimes when I turn on a television set and I watch the news and I see some of the way our world is going, it's comforting to me, not based on what I see, it's comforting to me to know in spite of present appearances, God is in control. And we need to get that into our personal lives and understand that. Man, I don't know what you're dealing with. I don't know what you're wrestling with. And it might look horrible from your vantage point. But God is in control. Now, that doesn't alleviate pain and suffering. I know that we've got that. We're sold that on television, right? That's not biblical at all. Do you remember the story of the three young men that got dropped into the furnace? Right? God didn't step up and go, well, these are my boys. I never have to go in the furnace. That ain't what happened. God went in the furnace and met them in the furnace, and he rescued them out of the furnace. Right? God is in absolute control. Some of us struggle with that idea because I don't like the way he's doing it. right? Because we got a better idea, don't we? I mean, don't we? Hey, don't say you don't think that. Because if God was sovereign and in control, how come there's all these evil things are happening? And how come this is happening to that person? And how come these kids are going? You say that crap out of your mouth, you know you do. Who are you to question the creator of the universe? Read Job, right? Another book of bad advice. Till the end, when Job's friends are corrected, right? And even Job is corrected. And then God says to him, where were you when I put this together? Where were you when I was measuring out the stars? Where were you when I was doing all this? Who do you think you are to question me? Man, God sees things we can't see. He sees the bigger picture. That's how I feel too. Right? And that's what a lot of people are saying when they see stuff happening. And then somebody says, God's in charge. He's sovereign. No, I don't like it. Well, I don't like it either, but I believe it and I trust it. And even though we face challenges in our daily lives and we see sometimes horrific things happening, I trust that God is at work. He's not alleviating our ability to make decisions and choices, because we are responsible for them. You're going to find that out when you read chapter 12, because chapter 12 contains one of the earliest hints at human responsibility, right, in prophecy. So, in spite of present appearances, God is in control. Let's pray.